comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling.
This is Smart Money, where it's important to save, be motivated, anticipate, be responsible, and be timely. I am your host, Josh Whalers. Welcome, everyone, to this Thursday evening on the fifth episode of Smart Money. I'm excited to get into our lesson today on retirement and overall wealth building. Tonight, I am joined by my permanent co-host, Jason Summers. How are you doing today, Jason?
I'm doing pretty great. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. How's your week going?
Getting through it. That's for sure.
I'm excited that I found a permanent co-host after the fifth episode. I'm glad that you're going to jump on board with Smart Money here and be the permanent co-host.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. Would you like to give an introduction about yourself? Tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So like you said, I'm Jason Summers. I am a senior here. I'm actually graduating in December, so I'll be graduating a semester early. I'm accounting and business major and with a concentration in finance. From Van Loo, Ohio. It's only probably about half an hour here from Bluffton. Not too far up 75 and off 15, but almost done. I've accepted a position for full time after I graduate at Marathon Petroleum. Did 4 internships in my time here, so that's a pretty great work experience.
Sounds like you're ready to be done and get out there. So congratulations on the Marathon position.
Thank you.
I'm kind of sad though. You're gonna be leaving me in December.
And I will. Hey, save a lot of money, though, so.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. I'm stuck here another semester. I'm kind of sad. I'll see you in May, though.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta walk across the stage at some point.
Still gotta walk.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's start with a couple of announcements. So, I got the former Bubble Buffett University Business Leader president with me. I'm the current vice president. Your fiance is the president. So, it's only appropriate that we do a little Bubble announcement. So Bubble has a lunch and learn event happening November 8th at noon with the CEO, co-founder of 50 Strong, as well as the marketing coordinator. Ashley Thompson is the CEO and Mackenzie Ball is the marketing coordinator. Come out and get some pizza and learn about their business and how they grew. And I believe they're now in selling products in Walmart and Amazon. Selling products such as protein shakers, sports bottles, flying discs, and bike accessories, as well as everyday bottles. So that'll be exciting. So everyone come on out, get some pizza, and more importantly, get some A&L credit, because we all need some A&L credit unless you have all yours. Then just come out and get some pizza. And I have to give a congratulations to the Mega Million winner or winners from Sintonville, South Carolina. Congratulations, everyone, that or whoever won. I hope you didn't buy too many tickets, and hopefully the taxes don't get you too strong, but congratulations and nonetheless. All right, Jason, what do you say we jump into some market news, some stock market numbers?
Works for me. Always love looking at those.
So you want to be the honorary? You want to give the numbers? I always give them. You want to give them this week?
You can go for it. I'll join in here.
Yeah, I'll go. So let's start, with the big one. So we got Dow Jones. First of all, a lot of green today. Seen a lot of green, which is always good. It's always good to see green. So Dow Jones up 401 points, ending at 24,984. NASDAQ up 209 points, ending at 7,318. And the S&P 500 up 49 points, ending at 2,705. What do you think of that, Jason?
It's a nice day. It's nice to see some green after all this red we've had lately. I'm just hoping to see if this is... the market kind of corrected itself a little bit. I'm hoping to see maybe getting back into a little bit of a bull market here. But I don't know. We were talking earlier about I'm just hoping this isn't an old dead cat bounce,
Yeah.
And for those of you not familiar with that, basically it's just kind of a quick little jump back up before it keeps going down. So if you can check that out on Google if you want to learn more about that.
Yeah, but check out the dead cat bounce.
Dead cat bounce. Yeah, I had a trader teach me about that one of my internships. I thought he was joking. It's an actual thing.
That's pretty interesting right mm-hmm. there. But I can see it because you have that little extra jump or push off the ground, and then boom, you know, you hit the ground pretty hard.
Yeah, so it's just depending on if this is going to sustain heading back up or at least somewhat level, or if we're going to be looking back into the red. So, but time will tell. And honestly, I think it's just kind of everybody's getting a little nervous around the election time. And honestly, stuff was trading pretty high. So,
election, interest rates going up, all that. It might have, all the red in the past 2 weeks might have just been the market adjust, like freaking out. And now we kind of are adjusting back into what it was. But, you could still see some red in the, hopefully not too much red in the closing quarter, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can only fly so high for so long. I mean, you were seeing record highs
constantly.
So, I mean, it's to be expected. I mean, when you're checking out anything with stock market, I mean, you got to expect some downs being with your ups. You can't have, your cake and eat it too. So sometimes you got to be ready for the down days and hang on and make it through.
Oh, yeah. So earlier, before the show started, we were talking about Amazon. They killed it today.
They crushed their earnings.
Yeah. Let's see. They were up 117 points at close, ending at 1,782. But looking at after hours. They crushed it during the market hours, after hours. Be interesting to see what it opens at tomorrow morning.
I'm really wondering what happened. I think if I was looking at it right, their earnings call was actually after close. I think they gave numbers before the bell rang today. So I think there might have been something in that earnings call that obviously spooked some investors. I mean, we looked at it. I mean, there was like a 7% gain during trading hours. And now it's lost every bit of that and then a little more. So it's not ideally what you like to see, but
not at all.
I'll have to look at that one a little more and see. But Tesla, too, made their first profit in, I don't know if it was ever, it's at least a long time. But congratulations, Elon.
Yeah. And anyone out there owning Tesla shares, congratulations. I know. All you investors out there in Tesla.
A lot of people out there were short in that one, so I think a lot of people probably got hurt on that, but a lot of people that were in it being long in it, today was your day. Go celebrate.
I remember looking at it in the summer, and prices were at like 260. They haven't gone below 280 in a while. It's been a while.
I hadn't been checking it that closely, but I mean, I know it kind of still had that resilience there. We think about it. They make great cars. They're extremely safe. And let's be honest, it's really the only electric car there is out there that you can proudly say, hey, I drive this. And you're not like ashamed of it. Yeah. Like they're cool.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to correct myself. It has gone below. But, and it has been one stock that has been up and down. I'm kind of excited to see them actually meet some numbers off the assembly line. I believe that they can be an actual competitor in our U.S. car market. Their cars are something else. When I was in D.C., I went to Tyson's Corner, and they have their own Tesla shop in that mall there in Tyson's Corner. Got to go in, see a Model S, Model X sitting there. Whew! Got to climb in one. It's a different experience when you climb into that one. I have a 12-point-inch iPad, but they're putting a different kind of size tablet in that console. And that thing is something else.
Yeah, big, massive touchscreen right there, right?
Yeah, it's huge. And the roof, the front glass is coming over your head. Like, it is just, if you ever get a chance to climb in one. Because it is a unique experience once you climb in one. Let's see. So let's check out Apple. Jason here, he's coming on knowing that I'm an Apple guy. So, but we have a couple Apple-related news stories, so I think it's only appropriate that we see where Apple's at and jump into our little news stories that we got. So Apple went up 4 points, ending at 219.80, which they've been fairly consistent and up from where they have, but they've had a heck of a ending couple quarters here. We got the iPhone launch in September, and now we're coming up to an October 30th event. People speculating new iPads, new Macs. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to watch it, see what Apple brings. But I know I won't be able to afford any of it, sadly. Welcome to being a college student. That's all right. We'll Someday we'll be able to afford it.
Someday. Yeah, I'm interested to see how the new 10S and 10S Max are selling. I want to see those numbers, see how those are selling. That's one thing. I think if they can really start getting those selling, and I think the Max is going to be key to it. If they can get those selling, I mean, they got more cash than what they know what to do with. So, I mean, I think that'll be nice. They did a little more innovation, gets them back kind of cool again. I mean, if you look from the 6 through the 8, it was the same thing. So it's always nice to see some innovation there, and I'm curious to see what they're going to do with the iPad. Big, massive screen on one of those. That'd be cool.
Well, so ever since, Steve Jobs passed away, Apple hasn't been the innovator that they were when he – because he pushed the envelope.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't scared to push the envelope, and I kind of missed that. I kind of missed that from Apple. Steve was one – he's like, we're gonna bundle the iPod – and a phone, and we're going to put them all together, and we're going to start selling it in 2007. And then they had the iPad, the first iPad. No one done a tablet. He was the first to do the tablet. And now I just feel like they're trying to copy but add their own twist on products. Like, Amazon comes out with the Amazon or Alexa speaker, and shortly after, of course, Apple comes with the HomePod. And, yeah, it's unique, but Apple has really done well with decreasing customers' elasticity. I'm bringing some economics into this. I was talking to the economics professor about this. So, Apple decreases a lot of people, makes you very less elastic, more inelastic, to where their ecosystem, you can't leave. Once you fully indulge yourself in that ecosystem, it is hard to get out of it. You got the iPhone, the iPad, the Mac, an iPod, an Apple TV. If you have all the products, good luck getting out. It's hard because everything is just, they pride themselves on all their devices working seamlessly together. And I found it hard for myself. Like, I know I'm never going to be able to leave. I've accepted that I won't be able to leave. And yeah, so, well, why don't we jump into a couple of articles that we have for Apple here. Let's see. Business Insider is reporting that Apple and Samsung have both been hit with fines from the anti-watchdog group in Italy. They're each paying 5 million euros each, which is roughly $5.7 million. The fines were linked to complaints that they both use software updates to slow down mobile phones. Apple was hit with an additional 5 million euro fine for failing to give customers clear information on how to replace handset batteries.
Honestly, I don't think that comes as a surprise to anyone. I mean, especially me. So I've worked at Verizon for on and off probably over the last 2 years. Still do right now, in between my internships. And our running joke was, oh, here's an iPhone launch. As soon as they announced it, we had more traffic coming into the store with random one-off problems that people have with their phones to where stuff would just stop working. That had never done it before, to where stuff would start happening, people's phones started getting slow, batteries started dying, to where we would always just make the joke. And honestly, that didn't come as a surprise to me at all. I was disappointed. I mean, the part where they had to pay an extra $5 million for failing to give clear information, that is just sad, honestly, on my end, looking at that from a consumer and from a business point, to where that you just need to own up to it. Yeah, hey, we did this. We weren't clear about it, but here's how we're going to do it going forward. Here's what you can do to fix it. Own up to it. Take the PR hit, but you got to get ahead of the story and kind of come out in front of it.
I agree with that. That's a true point. I don't know why they didn't fix it. Just fix it. Why pay an extra? Like you said, they have more money than enough to do with. They'd rather not take the PR hit. I don't see why not take the PR hit. Your stock isn't going to take a hit when you have two different events happening back-to-back, September and October, and you just get hit with a fine. Your PR is going to be fine. Your stock price is going to be fine. People are more worried about the devices you're releasing than the fine you paid in Italy, especially from a U.S. standpoint. Most people probably hardly even saw this, and we've already went through our problem with them. I believe the U.S. is still looking into what they did with throttling the phones in the U.S., but they replaced the batteries, and, Apple's a large company. They'll put the news out there, but you kind of have to dig for it and have a few sources to get to it. But
Yeah, my I mean, my worry always is, especially for something as commoditized as a phone, if you lose faith in the manufacturer behind that phone, it's as easy as being out of your contract or out of your payments, whatever you're in, to hop over to go check out, hey, what's the Pixel doing? That looks cool. Or, hey, what's Samsung got now? What about them curved screens? That sounds cool. To where you can switch phones now, it's easy. Now, Apple, though, like you mentioned with the ecosystem, it kind of got you reined in. But, I mean, as a company, if people start losing faith in you, that's crushing at times. I mean, you've seen, I mean, even from some airline things, yeah, how big of a hits they've taken, and even some companies, people refuse to fly with them anymore.
Yeah.
To where, I mean, bad PR and just straight losing trust can really hurt you in the long run.
I think the thing that's doing it for Apple is how I mentioned their innovation. People wouldn't be so mad like about things if they were being innovative. Like, they're the first ones to do this. Oh, my gosh, that's so cool. And now they're just giving us the runaround. Like, sometimes, you know, I like their products. I enjoy their software. It's new. And they change it up here and there. But the products, there hasn't been a new product since, what, the iPad?
Yeah.
Like, a truly new product.
I mean, technically, the HomePod. They're like Alexa and Google Home competitor, but it's super expensive, and I really don't know anyone who's bought it. Yeah. I don't even know if they're shipping it yet, honestly. That's how much I've looked into it. Last I knew, they weren't. So they're real behind the game there. But that's been my main complaint of Apple, is there's – I think they got comfortable to where they say, you know, good's the biggest enemy to being great. That they got just complacent. And they're like, hey, we're doing great. Everyone and their brother buys our phones. Why do we need to do anything different? And, I mean, my biggest complaint was they were doing no innovation. And that was a thing that they were so, so good at. Especially, like you mentioned, with Steve Jobs, they were so good at it. And now they just kind of were like, eh, here you go. It's the same thing as the last one, just, well, we made it faster. The battery's better. And the new iOS. There you go. Yeah, so, I mean, it was disappointing. Where, I mean, and people would come in and they would still buy the iPhones. And I mean, it was hilarious. Between a 7 and 8 launch, we had a call from those when I was working at Verizon. They were trying to tell us, you know, how to sell the 8 or the 7. And there was like no difference. I mean, the camera's a little bit better. The battery's a little bit better. It's a little bit faster. Yeah. I mean, if someone asked you, hey, why should I buy this and replace my 7 with it? You kind of just stood there and said, because it's the new iPhone. And sad enough, that usually people were like, okay, I'll take it. So, I mean.
Which is sad right there.
Which, I mean, it is. But, I mean, for them, shout out to their marketing department. You guys are awesome. That's amazing. I don't know how they did it, when it happened, yeah, but there is a total just, I don't want to call it like a cult following, but they have the most loyal purchasing like group there is. It's insane.
If you were a marketing major, please. Go check out Apple's marketing, and please get back with me. I want to know what they're doing, because they are doing exceptionally well.
They made it cool. That's the thing, is they made it cool. If you look at Apple cases, I mean, I have an iPhone myself, to where if you look at it, if you look at your case, there is a hole cut out in the case so people can see your Apple logo. That's how cool it is to have an iPhone. So you had to leave a hole in your case on the back of the phone so people could see the logo, see your Apple.
And Apple does that on purpose. They won't – if you are a company and want to put a case in their store, you have to go by their packaging standards. And guess what their packaging standards is? All white. Your outside box has to be all white. If you walk into an Apple store and look at all of the cases hanging on the wall, they are all in white boxes. All of the third-party companies selling in Apple store have packaging standards set by Apple to get into their store. That marketing department has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it hasn't just started. It's been years and years ago, and they have just ran away with it. When you get a product in front of you, you can already tell it's an Apple product. If I take all of the logos and the pictures off of the box, you already know what product's inside of it that they have done so well. You can tell by the packaging that that's an Apple product. That place has done exceptionally well. So newsflash, Jason, the HomePod is out.
Okay.
HomePod's out. And we had a little, what I want to call it, a little problem with that too. The white one left white rings on wood furniture.
I did see that, actually. Yeah, Okay, yep. Yeah. I remember that because people were – I mean, someone put them on like really nice tables or tables or dressers or what be it, coffee tables that were like really nice wood. I mean, It's not exactly what you want on your, you know, couple $1,000 table there.
Nope.
I mean, I guess you could put a mat down and move on, but you can only buy so many mats.
Yeah. So we're going to see what happens. So October 30th, next week, 9to5 has reported Apple has registered multiple devices in the Eurasian database ahead of the 30th event. I'm pretty excited. We're talking three new Mac models. Reporting updates to the MacBook, iMac, Mac Mini, and a brand new low-cost Apple laptop to replace the MacBook Air. And the iPad Pro will see some serious updates coming in with an 11-inch and 12.9-inch screen sizes, sporting those slim bezels and no home button with Face ID. So I'm pretty excited. I have a MacBook Air myself. I think the big thing right there is the brand new low-cost Apple laptop model.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And I mean, they're doing that with the 10R too, phone-wise, to where they're not only giving you the high-end stuff they're doing, but they're giving you, we'll call it, economic options. But the thing is, I mean, those are pretty great too.
But please don't mess this up. Apple, please.
Don't give us a 5C.
Yes, don't give us a 5C. Please don't mess this up. I'm begging you. Please don't mess this up. If you're coming out with a low-cost laptop, please, from the bottom of my heart, give us something decent with some serious internals, and don't make it like it was, like the old 12-inch MacBook. That thing is good until you have nothing to, you have no ports to plug anything into. That laptop's good unless you are fully indulged into an Apple ecosystem and everything you own is wireless. Other than that, I think that product could have been better. So please, Apple, don't mess up a low-cost laptop model. I'm begging you.
Well, and it's interesting, too. I mean, even how we were talking about the marketing department is you have a brand that is – I mean, if you look at, like you said, stores are white. Everything is modern. It's high-end. They're known to be high-end, great product last a long time. I mean, we're talking like the Lamborghini of technology here. And you start venturing into affordable economic options, it kind of makes me wonder – I mean, obviously, they're still going to focus on their flagship, more nice stuff, but do you want your brand to start being associated with, oh, hey, that's the cheap iPhone or that's the cheap MacBook? I don't think they'll have a problem with it, but it might be something, you know, just keep in the back of your head there.
They could divide their market. Maybe that's what they're going for. Maybe they're, like, trying to divide their customer base. Like, oh, he has the 10R. I got the 10S. I'm better than you. I have the 10S.
I don't know if that's quite what they're going for, but I mean, I would definitely say they're taking shots at some, I mean, PCs are cheaper. Let's be honest. Everyone knows that. To where they're starting to hit the lower cost models and stuff to where they can now be competitive there.
But I still believe the market, even if they did that, if they put the low cost model in a Walmart, everyone's going to flock to it if it is priced. But when you get out into, you know, society and, you know, oh, I'm sporting that Apple logo, right? And you're going to Starbucks thinking you're going to sport that, but people know that that's the low-cost model. You know, you're not going to, you might still get the same look because you are sporting an Apple logo, but people are like, oh, that's a low-cost model. They might not give you the high respect if you were, you know, sporting a 15-inch MacBook Pro with a touch bar. I can guarantee that low-cost model is not going to have a touch bar. What I'm excited for, though, there was rumors that Apple was going to make their own chips for their laptops.
I've heard that. That's a long time coming, though.
I hope it's not. I want it this year. Mm-hmm. I want it October. Yep. I want it next. And what next week? I want it next week. I want Apple making their own chips for those laptops. Those laptops are going to be faster. Apple has proven that they can make a chip for a phone. So we're talking the internals of a phone running in a Mac OS. That thing will be a beast.
Be something definitely to look out for. I'm honestly excited to see how big the iPads will be. I mean, I'm sitting here with – I have Josh's iPad here in front of me, and this is what, a 12-inch?
12.9.
And this thing is huge.
Now, just imagine that.
All screen.
All screen. We're talking – we're going edge to edge. We're talking iPhone. We're talking – we get the little fancy notch for Face ID, but we're talking edge to edge. No home button. That thing is going to be massive.
Yeah, and well, I mean, because even if you look at the iPhone, the XS Max, that has a 6.5-inch screen. Most tablets have a 7-inch screen. So you have, it's almost a tablet screen in your pocket already. Now you take their big tablet and you blow that screen up even more, It's going to be exciting. It's going to be huge.
It will be huge. I was kind of thinking the other day, I kind of miss having something small that I can work out with. Everything is going so big because we love our entertainment. But you know how hard it is to work out with a plus-size iPhone? Imagine trying to work out with an iPhone XS Max. What are you going to do, strap that thing to your bicep? That thing is about the size of your bicep.
I mean, it's the same size as the pluses were. But yeah, no, it's huge. I don't have the plus size myself personally. I like the smaller one. You can put it in your pockets and stuff. I don't need something massive.
Well, I have the massive one, and I found it hard. You can't do anything active with that thing. It's hard. I kind of miss the old small, you know, the size of the 4.
Just go get yourself an old iPod. Use that for music. There you go.
Well, my mom had like an iPod Nano 5th Gen with the 2-inch screen on it. I think it was smaller than that, but and it had the little clip on the backside. The only problem is it doesn't have Bluetooth technology. You just have to go out and buy an adapter. But still, I kind of miss small devices. And, yeah.
Well, it's funny. I mean, if you look back at phones, I mean, they started huge. They started making them basically as small as physically possible. And now we're like, hey, let's make them big again. Like, it just seems so backwards. It's hilarious how it happened. But, I mean, it was like everybody was trying to make it small, small, small. And then the touchscreen happened. I was like, let's make this big again.
I want a flip phone. Samsung's supposed to be making a foldable phone. I think I saw that somewewhere.
Yeah, that's been rumored for a while.
All right, whichever company comes out with a flip phone and makes it cool again, you get some extra props. If you can make a flip phone cool again, you're winning. All right, we probably should. Let's move on to tonight's segment of Say What? Where we're going to talk about an article that I was sent. And it's titled, 6 Things I Don't Agree With Dave Ramsey On. Which I disagree with what they don't agree with. So, let's see.
It's just mystery. I thought there might have been a couple valid points in here. So, this will be interesting. Let's get into
this. I like this. So, first one. Backup. I got a backup first. The person that wrote it took Financial Peace University, or she facilitated her first FPU, Financial Peace University class, 16 years ago, and she paid $2,500 to take Dave Ramsey's training to be qualified as a certified financial counselor in 2008. So she has been indulged in Dave Ramsey for a while now. So let's jump into what she doesn't agree with. Number one, using cash envelopes. She says it's inconvenient to do so when you make purchases online or you have to drag all three of your little kids into the gas station to prepay at the pump. And it might be dangerous if depending on the neighborhood you live in. She says only use cash for your spending categories that are out of control, eating out, groceries, and entertainment. She says her non-cash alternative would be to open a separate checking account with a debit card for your discretionary spending money, like groceries and that kind of stuff. She says she uses that rider a lot herself, and she says certain debit card that use strictly for my splurge purchases. So, what do you think about that one?
Well, so I think there's two parts to this. So the first part being the disagreement with Dave, and I don't know if it's more of a recent thing, probably, but he is fine with debit cards.
Yes.
He is not an ancient man that doesn't understand the card technology and doesn't trust banks and the magical non-paper money. So he is very much a big fan of debit cards,
yes.
Not of credit cards, debit cards.
Yeah.
So
debit only.
Yep. So I think that's a little bit of it to where even he understands, yes, it's inconvenient to have cash sometimes. But also, I mean, another part is it's actually inconvenient to not have cash at times. I mean, there's been times where I rarely have cash with me anymore, especially being a college student here. I mean, everything's direct deposited. Really don't need much on campus here. Like today, I went and got a haircut. Cash only. Had to go to the ATM, get cash. So it's always good to have a little bit of cash. But I mean, I think that's the part she disagrees with technically with Dave. He actually really doesn't say that. So I think that part's a little kind of faulty. But I mean, I agree. I mean, if you're going to get gas, debit card's fine. If you're going to do X, Y, Z, whatever it is, a debit card's fine as long as you control yourself. Or like she said, I like the idea though, open up another checking account.
Yeah. I think it's good. My problem with this is if you're completely out of control, please use some cash envelopes. And sometimes we're getting into a plastic world. We need to take a step back. It might be inconvenient, but that inconvenience humbles you. It grounds you. I don't care how inconvenient it is. You do it sometime. It might be negative 32 outside, and it's snowing and blowing, and you need gas in your car. I don't care how inconvenient and cold it is. Sometimes you do it for, 6 months, and you're like, next time you go to use your debit card, you're like, wow. You're impacted by it. So I kind of, after you get into that, I do agree with her. Sometimes it is inconvenient, but when you are in trouble, use cash. And I do like her ideas. Open up a separate checking account. I don't mind that. I agree with her. I don't think she completely disagrees with Dave on this.
No, yeah, I think they, they're kind of honestly almost in the same boat there.
Yeah.
But, hey, you don't have to worry about card skimmers or gas pumps if you use cash, right? Hey, so maybe you get a little more security there, too.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Right, take that one. That's a good point. I didn't think of that one. That's a good one. All right, so number two. And this one I completely disagree with. I'll say that straight up front here. Sure, second one is cutting up your credit cards. She says, most people can learn how to use a credit card responsibly even if they've misbehaved in the past. When I'm coaching clients with credit card debt, I suggest they temporarily put them on ice and stop charging on plastic. I suggest they keep one credit card with a low limit. They can charge a few items they're not tempted to overspend on, like gas for their car or their cell phone bills, to keep the credit score in a healthy range. Jason, you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, again, this one has a couple parts to it here. That last part there, to keep your credit score in a healthy range. And that's kind of one thing. We're both Dave Ramsey fans. So when you – it's like a dog chasing his tail, I think is the best way he explains it, to where you're like, I need to keep my credit score up. Why? So I can borrow money. Why? So I can keep my credit score up. Why? So I can borrow money. It's like, it's just a big cycle. And you shouldn't really be worried about your credit score. Honestly, the goal is, whether you think Dave Ramsey's a genius or you think he has no clue he's talking about, the whole concept of not having debt really is pretty widely agreed on. That's not a good thing to have debt.
Yeah.
I don't like that part. And again, this kind of goes to what we were talking about earlier, to where if you have a person that is really having self-control issues, or you're just impulse buying your mind off, can't get off Amazon or whatever it is, making their earnings go through the roof, to where, if you buy something on your credit card, it's like, you have no emotional attachment to it. It's like, I'll just pay it later, right? Yeah. And even if you I'll just pay it off every month, if something comes up, I'll pay it next month. And then next month comes, and I'll pay it next month. So, honestly, the whole credit card thing, you're kind of just playing with fire. No one ever got rich saying, hey, I got rich because I got 1% cash back on my Discover card. I got rich because I got free flights. No one says that. You didn't get rich because of that. You know how much you got saved, spend on a credit card to get $1,000 back? $100,000. How bad of a deal is that? Here you go, Josh. I'll give you $1,000 if you give me $100,000. How's that?
No, good. All right, so I don't need to say anything on that. Jason kind of wrapped that one up exactly what I was going to say. Cut them up, people. You don't need them. Have some plastic surgery. Cut them up. You don't need them. We're going to say about that. Cut them up. We don't need credit cards. Cut them up. I don't need them for, like you said, we're not trying to make other people's jobs easier by having a credit score. Cut them up. We don't need them.
Well, another thing, I think the excuse some people have is they use that as, well, what if there's an emergency?
Get an emergency fund. That's what I'm going to say about that. Get an emergency fund. We don't need credit cards. You don't need to be borrowing money when you don't have money. That doesn't make sense. Cut them up. Just cut them up. Straight into the point. Cut them up. All right. Number three, paying off your smallest debt first. It says, when you have a debt with a massively high interest rate, you might be better off attacking it first, even if it's number three or four on your list. With this, I think it's an emotional. Personal finance is 80% behavior, 20% knowledge. I think use that as a motivation to get to it faster. Start with the smallest one. You want to have quick wins. You don't want to have to. You don't want to feel like you're getting nowhere. You don't feel like a rat
in a wheel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The whole time and not getting anywhere. Start with that smallest one. Get it paid off. You want to be gazelle intense. Get it paid off, and move on. If it's three or four on the list, use that as motivation to get to three or four on the list faster to get that thing paid off. Interest rates shouldn't matter here. They're not going to make a huge difference if you are gazelle intense in getting after these debts. It's 80% behavior. You can't. You're going to feel like a rat in a wheel if you're starting with ones that have interest rate and you're trying to just get the smallest one paid off and get some traction and get going. Do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, the only other thing I'd add is to where if you're going to have that high of an interest rate, you're not going to have anything that would be too far down your debt snowball that has that high of an interest rate. I mean, a credit card, yeah, has high interest rate. How much can you rack up on a credit card, though? Let's be honest. You can't get it that high. If you have a payday loan with a stupid high interest rate,
yeah,
you can't get one for that much. If you have, I mean, anything, even a car where you get a super high interest rate on a car, you're not going to get a $30,000 car with a 22% interest rate. It just doesn't happen. So, I mean, I think that's kind of flawed right there, too, to where, okay, if you do have a super high interest rate and if it's maybe like second instead of first and you can knock it out real quick, okay, if that's what you need to get going, do it. But just stay with the I agree with you. Stay with the debt snowball. There's nothing that can be. I mean, it's not like you're going to have a $100,000 debt. Your house isn't going to have a 22% interest rate. Big assets don't have that high of an interest rate.
And that's the thing. With the debt snowball, your house is down on the baby step list anyways. Mm-hmm. Unless you really want to get after your house in the baby in the snowball, that's your choice. But at the thing, it's baby step number 6. Leave it there. Don't worry about the house. You're making your payments on your house, but you're taking out the car, the credit cards, personal loan, anything like that. You're taking those out. All right. So number 4, never buying a new car unless you're a millionaire. I don't think you need to reach millionaire status to buy a new car, especially if you pay cash for it and intend to drive it for a long while. Would you like to go first, Jason, on this one?
Yeah. So the main issue here is Dave goes into the depreciation. You're losing a lot of money. I mean, as soon as you drive it off a lot, you're losing a lot of money. And a lot of people, when you buy a new car, I mean, new car is probably what, 20, 25, 30, 35,000?
Wait, what are we buying here? Are we buying just a car?
I mean, it depends. You buy a car, you can get crazy with a truck, get up into the 60s. I mean, you can spend
an SUV, we're spending 70,000?
You can spend about as much as you want on a car. I mean, even if you get some cheaper, real cheap ones, you're looking 15 to 20. So it's the thing. I mean,
most trucks nowadays are pretty, like, we're talking 37 to 40 just for a used truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Trucks are one, they hold their value so well now, it's crazy. But to where a lot of people, if you're making $60,000 as a household income, if you buy a $30,000 car, which is probably right about average, you just have half of your entire salary for the year in an asset that just dropped a quarter of its value in a day. Just because you put your name on the title?
Not even a day. If you drive off the lot, it just lost that the time you stepped off the lot and you pulled out into the road. Boom. You just lost all that value.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I got to admit here, I bought a new car. I'll come out here.
Your situation is different.
We all do some stupid things. But I used to work at a car dealership in high school too. So I bought it right at the end of the model year. So they had a $2,000 rebate on it. I used to work there. So they gave me a good deal. Great people. Shout out LaRich Toyota. You guys are great. Mike was the one who helped me with it. Great guy. But yeah, it's one of those things that I kind of did that before I started listening to Dave too. But yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it wasn't crazy high. It wasn't. I mean, the depreciation hit, honestly, is what the deal I got on it. So I didn't have a big crazy loss on it because I got a good deal. But yeah, no. Hindsight's 2020 here. Probably shouldn't have done that. Okay. Bit off a little more than not more than I could chew, but I mean, it's not having a car payment or not having that to worry about. I mean, would be nice, but sometimes you just got to clean up your mess though. So
yeah. I was going to ask if you regret it, but so you would change the decision?
I mean, I wouldn't buy. I mean, I needed a car.
Well, yeah.
So I mean, I would have just bought something cheaper.
Okay. Would you buy something used? New to you used?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to buy it with cash, it would have to be definitely used. But, I mean, to give you an idea, the price range we got was right about used price range. So,
yeah, so, right. Well, yeah, your good situation's good a little deal. Different there. Yeah, being a car salesman, that's being.
Oh, no, I didn't sell. I was back detailing.
You're back detailing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, washing cars. Perfect high school job. Never had to work fast food, but.
That's a rough day, though. I detailed my own car. Getting down there waxing, that's mm-hmm. rough.
Yeah, no, what do you think about that, though, the new car? You seem pretty strongly set in that one. What do you got?
Always buy a used car. Let someone else take the hit if they really want to take the hit. Go when you drive into that lot, you go straight to the used section because you can buy a really nice used car. And do some research before you go on the lot. Really do some research. Know if you're not a car person, take someone that knows cars and have them be your talk person. Have them do your talking for you.
Even if you're good with cars, honestly, you should always have a mechanic look at it. If you go to a dealership, 99% of the time, they'll do it for free for you. They'll do a free inspection for you. Yeah. They'll tell you, hey, you know what? This part isn't looking so good. Maybe you should have that checked out. Or bring someone with you that is a mechanic. If you got a friend that you trust and is good, bring them with you. I know a lot of people get scared because, like, oh, I might buy a lemon or I might do that. Just bring someone with you. Do your research. I mean, let's be honest. Should you be shopping for a used Kia? Probably not. Should you be shopping for a good quality, you know, cars that are known to last forever, like a Toyota, Honda, some Fords? I mean, do your research. If it's a car that has terrible consumer reports, probably don't want to buy that one. If it's got great consumer reports, guy down the street just drove one by with 300,000 miles on it, it's got my vote.
Yeah.
I own two Toyotas, so I mean, I'm kind of biased there, but yeah. I kind of want to see how many I can get on the one. So
yeah, let someone else take the hit. Do your research. Take someone else. You might be a little biased to the car if you've been searching for a while. Take someone else. They always find something that you didn't find. So always take someone else to look at it with you and always buy a used car. That's what I'm going to say about that one.
Perfect.
All right, let's wrap up these last two so we can take a quick break here before we jump into the lesson. Putting your 401k contributions on hold while you're paying off debt. She says most people can and should stock away money for retirement even while they're paying off debt and building up an emergency fund. I don't think we need to say too much about this. We can probably get into it in the lesson. That's her fifth one. Let's save it. We're going to put that in the lesson. How's that sound? We'll put that one in the lesson.
Yep, we'll definitely touch on that.
Pursuing your financial goals with maximum intensity is her sixth one. She says you can't sprint indefinitely, but you can keep up a marathoner's pace for the long haul. She would have people come back and they'd say, we did great for a year, 18 months, or 2 years, but then we just fell off the wagon. Sometimes they'd be even worse shape than when they'd taken the class. What the heck is going on? The only thing I'm going to say about this, first of all, she needs to go back and retake the course, Financial Peace University, for one. Because Dave does not say you need to be in a straight sprint through the entire baby steps for one. And two, you can't go sprinting through all the baby steps and you sprint through the first two. Because you want to get debt paid off and you want to get your emergency fund build up. First three, you want to get that emergency fund build up as fast as you can through three. After that, you're back. And during that time, you kind of back up, you slow down. You don't have, during, you know, your debt snowball, yes, you're eating beans and rice and beans all the time. And you're living on, you know, basically nothing. And you might trade in those iPhones for flip phones for a while. But after that, you can get your iPhones back. You can go to the store, actually buy some food, and you kind of, through the steps, you start, you know, giving yourself a little more leeway, and you start from a sprint, you start slowing down a little bit, and then by the time you get to four and five, six, now you've kind of reeled it back. Now you're getting to the last of them, and you're looking towards what we're going to talk about, and basically just building wealth and getting your financial future, you know. You've cleaned up the mess, and now you're looking in the into the future. So, I don't know what this one is, Jason.
I mean, I think this one there just, again, like you said, you're not going through all seven steps at a dead sprint. One and two, you're going to hit really hard. Three, if you need, you can kind of start letting up a little bit, not much. But then definitely when you get to four, five, six, you start enjoying it more. But yeah,
definitely.
Step two, you shouldn't. She says in here, I mean, they did great for a year, 18 months, or 2 years. That's really all you should be in baby step two for. If you got that much debt and you can't pay it off that quick, it's time to start selling some stuff. If it's that car that's in there for real big, put it up for sale sign, stick it out front. It's time to sell it. You shouldn't be here doing this that long.
Yeah.
I definitely think if you don't go hard at it, it's hard to get out of debt. It's not hard to go in. It's hard to get out. So you have to be intentional.
Yeah, he always says you can wander into that, but you can't wander out. All right, I think that's all we got to say on those six. You can't sprint through them all, but you gotta sprint for a few and get through them. All right, we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about some retirement. I'm excited for this. So you're listening to Smart Money on 96.1 The Whip.